What more do you want from me?
I don't want peace. I want problems, always.
I'm done. I'm done with life. It is all Jermaine's fault. It's always Jermaine's fault. I'm done.
The hunt is on, and you're the prey.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to another edition of Office Hours with your brother, Professor Carl Tone Jones. I am Professor Carl Tone Jones, and I'm happy to be here. You know what I'm saying? You already know we're about ready to get it started, and we're about ready to push it forward. And as you already know, y'all, yous can't leave. Yous can't leave. You know, it's over. You're here. You're locked in. And we ain't going nowhere. All right, family. So check this out, right? First and foremost, man, I want to thank everybody for all the well wishes and, you know, good thoughts and positive energy you've been sending my way and prayers and so forth for, you know, like I said, for the last few weeks, you know, I've been telling you about my ordeal and so forth and overcoming a nasty infection. So, no, it was not an STI. I just want to be clear, you know.
Me personally, I wouldn't take this level of disrespect.
Just for people who might be out there trying to start rumors. It was, you know, it was something to stand in the nasty river water. You know what I'm saying? Blackfoot, watch your feet. That's all I got to say. So, but, you know, I'm feeling stronger and stronger every day. And had some real good visits to the doctors, and you know, I still take my herbs and things of that nature. That's not going to stop, and it's just a wonderful feeling to know and treasure, because it gives you a new appreciation for valuing not just life, but also valuing good health. And this is why I always tell you, brothers, maintain your health, because you know, I mean, fortunately for me, I had a caring family that and a network of people. My village was strong. It, you know, had to let a few people go, but it's cool. But the village is still strong. And and then one of the things that, you know, that happens with this is, you know, you grow an appreciation for the benefits of good health. And when you feel good, you do good things. And so a lot of times we're dealing with things, you know, And I heard that there was a tragic situation that happened with a member of the Dallas Cowboys recently. Let me see if I can find that, because I was just looking at it earlier. And, you know, I just want to make sure, you know, I want to. A young brother by the name of Marshawn Nealon dies, and they say it was an apparent suicide. So, you know, apparently there was something that happened. The news is coming out as there's something that happened, especially out of ESPN, with, you know, a car chase, and the man disappeared. And next thing you know, the cops were at perimeters, and they found him, unalived. You know, we always, when it's the cops involved, you always have to double check to make sure there's no janky business, because you always know how that is. But, you know, as y'all know, I run a support group for brothers. And, And one of the things we talk about is the need for brothers to have a place to lay our shields down, a place for us to observe some peace. And I recently listened to there was a clip on YouTube, and it was talking about how after you get a certain age as men. Now this brother was young; he was 20, I think he was 22, 24, so he was very young. So, but it talks about after men turn 40, right? And this is men in general. That they no longer, like, the things they desire in life change. Their priorities change. And they're no longer driven by their hormonal instincts. You know, naturally your body produces less testosterone. And then after that, you know, you don't want to put up with what you put up in your 20s. Some of us in our 30s. Some of us even in our 40s. But after you get to a point where you just want peace. And as brothers in particular, we get to that place where we want peace, man. And it's funny, several years ago when we started this podcast, and shout out to Suave, shout out to Les for bringing me on. But, you know, one of the things we talked about on this particular show here at Office Hours is we talked about how a black man's retirement home is usually the corner, you know, hole in the wall. And how after a certain age, you'll see brothers, like, you go to the old head spots, right? You don't go to the, like, the young spots. You got cats and they're still trying to, you know, they're trying to holler, whatever. You go to the old head spots. And some of the things you see is, like, you'll see the brothers in there chilling. You know, they laid back, they cool, they just focus. They got like maybe a beer. I don't know what else they may drink, but typically it's a beer too. And, you know, they got the kitchen popping, so they might order a fish sandwich or a wing platter or a turkey wing platter. You know what I mean? Smothered turkey chops or whatever. But they're out there, they're eating a meal, and they really just enjoying being out the house. That's the black man's retirement club, country club, whatever you want to call it, right? And a lot of times, people don't really get that. Like, that brother just wants to go home, live in his little efficiency apartment or his one bedroom. Some brothers just only have a room, but they find peace in that place. And, you know, for those of, like it's already established that when brothers have for the most part, right? Especially from my generation, Generation X and older, we don't need a lot to be satisfied and to be content. We just need peace. I can't tell you how often I come home and I'm just glad to be in the house. Like, I traffic gives me anxiety anymore because too many people after the pandemic got cars and they can't drive worth a damn. They can't drive. They're out here just doing whatever. So many people are on their phones driving full speed with both hands on the phone, texting and typing with their eyes off the road. You know what I mean? People I drove by and I'm just sitting there looking at them. And I say, you know, if it wasn't for the fact that I'd be doing the same thing they're doing, I would record their asses. Just to present, just put it out there like, yo, what is up with this? Anyway, I mean, we already couldn't drive in Philly. It's just gotten that much worse. So, you know, but, you know, as the people say, you know, sarah, sarah, you know, because that's what happens. But I want to, you know, get into something too, right? I want to get into something that we were talking about over the last year, the last 2 years, in fact, you know, and shit, you know. I want to get into, hold on, I'm still focusing on trying to get my shit right. Hold on. All right. So, all right, bet. Yeah. So we're transitioning. That's the transition. So one of the things that I wanted to get into is this whole Rhoda Osmond situation that happened. Right. So for those of you who don't know, this is the lady that was that went to the Haitian spot, right, out there in Houston. I think she's American Haitian or whatever. But she went to the Haitian spot, and then she made these wild accusations that these lumps that appeared on her face came from black men attacking her and black men just sitting there watching. And black men collectively, our public image got a black eye for this. All right. So it was later found that they not only, you know, that when the truth came out that it not happened, they found out she was also the aggressor, and like the man was trying to pull away from her. Eventually he smacks her in the face with a water bottle, right? Not a brick, but a water bottle. Now, I'm not saying a water bottle can't do no damage, because you hit somebody with a full water bottle, it can, you know, do some damage. But it wasn't the brick, and it wasn't the elaborate story that she told of just being the victim because he wanted her phone number and so forth. And the fact of the matter, she knew the man, because she came to the club. She was hanging out with the bull, you know, so she knew him. And so eventually it found out that she was running scams, that she had did something similar back in New Orleans like 4 years prior. And then she goes to GoFundMe, and she raised about $40,000 then, and she raised another $42,000 this time. Well, when the crows come home to roost, she was then later arrested. But I'll allow the clip to tell the story. So hold tight, y'all, because this is going to get interesting.
We begin with some late breaking news. Fox 26's Sherman DeSalle joining us live from the newsroom now with what's going on here. Sherman.
Yeah, so there's a few top stories that we're looking at. GoFundMe schemers found guilty tonight. A car crashes into a vet clinic in Montgomery County, and fire scorches land in Galveston Island. That's some of the top stories tonight. Let's start with the GoFundMe scheme story. Remember Rhoda Osmond? We talked about her a few times for the last couple of years. In 2023, she was known as the Brick Lady online. She made claims that a man threw a brick at her head outside of a bar in West Houston because she didn't give him her phone number. Well, she went on to collect $42,000 through a GoFundMe campaign she started after that. Well, a Harris County jury found her guilty of theft. She has to spend 90 days in jail, 10 years probation. She has to pay restitution, 10 years of no social media, which is big for her brand. All right, so let's go to the second story. In Montgomery County, a crazy car crash.
See, you know, they say God don't like ugly, right? And unfortunately, too many of us have to deal with this, right?
I'm done with life. And it's all Jermaine's fault. It's always Jermaine's fault. I'm done.
And this is why black men, we always say,
the hunt is on. And you're the prey.
See, people can get mad at me all they want for me actually being out here and reporting on issues like this and reporting on topics like this. They can get mad as they want to. But the bottom line is, you know, these are irrefutable facts. Okay? She was already caught with fraud. Now, she got convicted. This is not just, this wasn't a civil case. She was criminally convicted for this particular situation. And I just wanted to be clear about that, because a lot of people, you still have women out here talking about y'all cheering on a woman being separated from her children and this, that, and the other. And it's like, damn, y'all don't give a damn about innocent black men being framed. It's like, it doesn't matter. We don't come into account, right? And that, you know, that's going to come up again later on in this broadcast, right? And you know, it's crazy work. You know what I'm saying? But before we get into the rest of the broadcast, and now that I got your attention, I want to remind everybody that, you know, my brother Suave and I are co-sponsoring a food drive, a crisis holiday food drive for our students that have been impacted by the food crisis, by the government shutdowns, by all of their benefits being shut off as of November 1st. And at the Community College of Philadelphia. Now, we do understand when people say college kids, a lot of people have a very, 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 very shrewd, I would say, impression of what college students are. We're not talking about prestigious private colleges where you see these kids living carefree, this, that, and the other. The children's, the students, first of all, we don't have all traditional students. We have students that are older. We have students that are returning citizens back to the community from being incarcerated. We have students that have been impacted by poverty in such a way that you would not believe. And yet and still, they still raise their heads and come to school and try to do their best in the classroom every day. So one of the things that we want to do is just shed a light on their lives, their stories, but we also want to offer them some relief. In these particular times, it's getting cold outside, the temperatures are dropping, and we all know some of our students don't have a means to eat. Like a majority of, you talk to a lot of the students and find out why they're struggling in the classroom, you find out some of them haven't had a solid meal in a whole week. That they survive off of snacks, they survive off of chips, they survive off of candy, whatever they can afford. Like donuts or pastry, like cheap stuff that they can afford. They can't afford to actually provide for themselves. And many of them are heads of households. So, you know, we, Suave and I, put our heads together and we've been galvanizing resources. Shout out to Suave for a lot of the resources he's gathered. We have people delivering, I think we just got some turkeys the other day, you know. So shout out to that. And I think we are also, and we have baskets and, you know, we're trying to give away. We started off at a baseline of 10, but the way we're looking at it right now, man, we're trying to feed as many families as we can. So for anybody that's interested, hit a brother up. I give you my official CCP email. That way you will be able to verify that I am an employee at the Community College of Philadelphia. And therefore, so you can understand that we're not running any scams over here. We don't do scams over here. Okay? We don't do scams over here. So my name is good. Suave's name is good. And it's been good for decades. So my CCP email is CA Jones@ccp.edu. That's CA Jones@ccp.edu. All right. For those who want to reach out and figure out ways to contact us. And once again, we're not asking for cash. I spoke to a good brother of mine all the way down in South Carolina who he and his wife are going to look to actually do the digital shopping, where they order the items and the products off of Amazon, Walmart, Target, wherever, and they have them delivered, or the particular supermarkets in the area, and they have them delivered to our locations. So there are many various ways we can make this happen. Okay. So we just want, you know, we're just looking to feed families and hopefully get things through. So our deadline for putting these things together is Sunday, November 16th. That's Sunday, November 16th. That's literally, it's almost about 10 days away, 9-10 days away. So we still have time to feed more families. So let's get to it, family. For those of us who got it, let's get it. For those of you who don't got it, though, and you need it, I have a good friend if you're in the Philadelphia area. My good brother, Arnett Woodall, who's also been a generous contributor to our food drive. He is out West Philly Produce. That's South 18 South 62nd Street. That's 18 South 62nd Street in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And it's literally a half a block from Market Street, where you see the L train running through all of West Philadelphia. Okay, that's 18 South 62nd Street. All right, so I've spent a lot of time on this, but we have some things to come up. But I really want to skip over some things and come back to them another time, because we really have some really, really we have some real things to talk about. And first and foremost, you know, we're dealing with this, the impact of the government shutdowns and things of that nature. And I want y'all to hear with some of the, you know, experts, as they are called themselves. I want y'all to hear what some of them have to say about what's happening, the predictions and things of that nature. And I want y'all to understand something, man. I am one of the people that have been trying to warn people about where this country was going. I've been doing it since about 2010. I have been writing blogs. You can no longer find those blogs, unfortunately, because I think the server that I had it on was dismantled. But there used to be a server called blogger.com. And I had a blog that I used to write called The Rabbit Hole. And people would call me a wild conspiracy theorist because of some of the things that I saw. And this is just based on history and cycles and where this country was headed, the predictive programming through flicks and movies and things of that nature. Understanding what predictive programming is and how it operates is just what it says. You're getting programmed to be accepting to these changes that are coming down the pike, through the media. Maybe it's movies, maybe it's articles, maybe it's a political policies, swinging policies and so forth that you're being fed, such as this past election when it made My Body, My Choice an election issue. All right. So and I'm going to keep going back to that because that's bullshit. Not to say your body, your choice doesn't really mean anything. It does. But it was not an issue in terms of determining the next president of these United States. And not that I'm a fan of the current president, but I definitely wasn't a fan of the person he was running up against. And I'll never, 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 ever, ever step away from that. 10 toes down. So check this out, y'all. I want y'all to hear this.
Federal jobs have long been a lifeline for the black middle class. But as the government shutdown drags on, that lifeline may be unraveling.
When I was terminated, I was devastated.
Denise Joseph was terminated after nearly a decade at the Department of Education. She thought her job was secure, but just one day after the inauguration,
I got the email stating that I was put on admin leave. I thought it was a joke.
She, along with these two other former federal government employees, are now turning to other jobs or sectors altogether. Black workers have long dominated the federal workforce. Last November, nearly one in five federal workers identified as black or African American. Since then, the Department of Government Efficiency's reduction in force has led to thousands of federal job eliminations. Federal data showing black unemployment rose 1.5 percentage points from February to August, more than any other demographic group. Due to the ongoing government shutdown, the latest unemployment rate for September is unknown.
I'm demanding the Federal Reserve take immediate action.
With black women deeply affected by these cuts, Representative Ayanna Pressley is now calling on Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell to act in a letter first obtained by NBC News. The Fed declined to comment to NBC, but Pressley's office said they did respond to her letter. Pressley urging the Fed to use all available tools to uphold its mandate of maximum employment, and that includes black women.
This is disruptive of livelihoods and lives.
This panel of black professionals tells us the disruption is palpable and feels personal.
I thought once I made it to this level and was in this position that I would retire here, that as an individual of color, I made it.
Bobby Boyd's entire unit at the Department of Energy was eliminated. He took deferred retirement and now works for state government in Kalamazoo, Michigan.
My goal was also to retire from the federal government and to have that stripped away for nothing that you did. It's a ball of emotions from day one, and it still is. It is.
And before she goes on, I want to go back to the brother, right? And I want to go back to something he said, that as a person of color, I thought I made it. You know, what does that mean? I'm tired of, and this is one of the issues, that with no foresight and understanding and being able to read the room and understanding the need and the dependency that your job is going to have on the federal government to be able to provide it, and not understanding and seeing that these shutdowns happen, not just shutdowns, but departments get dismantled all of the time. And now more than ever, if you paid attention, there's something that was predicted, not just predicted, but stated during the year of 2020 that was put out there. And the fact of the matter is this thing, you know, that I'm about to talk about, was mentioned a long time ago in terms of how we think we have short attention spans. But, you know, for the last couple decades, they just didn't have a title for it. They named it in 2020. Okay? I just want y'all to be clear about that.
Traumatizing.
Nina Allen, once an executive coach to the Department of Education, pivoted to the private sector. But experts like Damon Jones say that pivot comes with a cost.
These types of jobs in the public sector were more likely to be unionized. Better benefits packages, better retirement packages, more stable employment when there's a downturn or a recession, and other types of union protections. I think in the private sector, you have a bigger chance of maybe rising to some of those highest levels of income and wealth, but it's a small chance.
And economists warn late career transitions can mean lost pensions, reduced earnings, and potentially delayed retirement.
If you had the opportunity to go back to your federal job after all of this, please raise your hand if you would.
I would.
Yes, I would probably go back once I achieve what I need to accomplish here in my hometown.
I would at a higher position.
And Nina?
Yes, definitely. I would go back. Being a veteran, I'm bred to serve. So I can work through anything and make it work and pivot where I need to. But yes, definitely, I would go back.
All Black professionals still ready to serve their government that's shut down and shutting them out. Zinclair Samoa, NBC News.
We thank you for watching. And remember, stay updated on breaking news and top.
Okay, y'all don't need any more pub. So check this out, right? And this is why I'm so like so airtight about, you know, dealing with, you know, understanding projections as a community. Most of these people don't really identify as Black first. Okay, what they identify is, and these are all, you know, two sisters and a brother. They were all talking from the standpoint of, you know, thinking that they were part of this engine, part of the wheel, part of the cogs that make this thing run. And when I say this thing, I mean the American dream. They believe that that was theirs, right? But they also don't understand that this whole concept, a lot of their offices were artificially created by the DEI push that was put in place by President Obama back when he was in office in 2012 and, you know, around those times when they were making a shift in policy, all right, leaning towards tolerance, but also creating minority jobs and so forth. And this is, ironically, this was a lot of people during the Obama administration, a lot of Black people that supported Obama. I was not one of them, okay? But a lot of people that supported Barack Obama, a lot of them looked at this and they sorted out they used the same jobs that we're talking about that are being taken away now. They used those same jobs as proof that he was opening doors for Black people. And you see how temporary that was. It wasn't anything permanent. It wasn't anything put in place. It wasn't anything that generations of Black people could depend on or rely on. See, this is when we talk about, you know, when you say window dressing. Well, these are the curtains in the house, but the house itself, right? The house itself will last a lot longer than those curtains. A lot longer. I mean, you know, how many paint jobs you put on your house before, you know, you pass on, or you pass it on to somebody else, you sell it. So this is the false dreams and all the, this is the, you know, hope, you know, that was in place. Well, a lot of these people lost their hope because, you know, one other thing that damning thing to Black people that happened is Barack Obama's presidency gave Black people the false sense of, now we can trust this country, we can trust this government. And it's never been the case. But so many Black people want to look down on our history. They don't want to study our history. They don't know anything about our history. If you watched our show earlier on the Shoulders of Giants, our reaction show, we talked about Black people who are talking about what racism is and if racism, you know, do we still live in term racism? And these are people who have very popular podcasts and actually influencers. And they're out here talking about, they have no clue. You can tell they have no clue of what racism, white supremacy is systemically. They're talking about it doesn't exist, yet and still describing being discriminated by certain systems, not being able to put two and two together. All right. So they have clearly no understanding. You know, recently deceased, God rest his soul, Nellie Fuller, stated that, and he's the one who coined the phrase racism, white supremacy. Many of you are familiar with Dr. Frances Cress Walston, who uses the term, but she gave credit to her Jagner, her elder, Nellie Fuller, who coined the term. And he stated in his famous work, it should be on everybody's bookshelf, all right, the United Independent Compensatory Code System and Concept Book, okay? And he called it, the title is A Compensatory Counter-Racist Code by Nellie Fuller, all right? This was coined in 2016, all right, revised and expanded. In this book, he talks about you know, he described something very, very poignant. And if you don't understand what racism is, racism, white supremacy is, what it does and how it operates, everything else you know will only serve to confuse you. And we have a lot of confused Negroes in this country. Globally speaking, yes, because white supremacy is a global concept, right? It's practiced everywhere. Well, I call it concept, but it's actually a phenomenon. It's everywhere, okay? In places white folk don't step a foot in, it's still affected by the policies, by the procedures economically, the politics, the wars, right, of white folk on this planet. So we need to acknowledge that. So I want to also get into another clip, right? Because this one actually talks about, goes deeper into, this one actually goes a little deeper into the whole notion of this thing. This thing, what is this thing I keep talking about? What is this thing I keep mentioning, right? This thing I keep talking about and I keep bringing up. This thing is called the Great Reset. And the Great Reset was something that was coined and talked about. And for those of you, especially a lot of you sisters, unfortunately, and a lot of you pandering Negroes, males, a lot of y'all really hated Kevin Samuels. But Kevin Samuels coined the phrase winter is coming. Well, he took it off of the Game of Thrones, but he added a different meaning to it. And he was actually trying to warn all people. Because he said this wouldn't just affect the women, it would just affect the women the most, especially black women, that there's a global reset that's going to take place, okay? And in this global reset, there's going to be a need for two income families, and not only are there going to be a need for two income families, there's going to be a need to share resources within those families. This is something that would, and that means black men and black women would have to learn how to find some common ground. Okay. Not this whole separation piece. Okay. That's been taking place. That has been celebrated by so many sisters who, when they were on their high horse, they celebrated not needing brothers. Okay. Let's be clear about that. And it was only when they started seeing the Passport Brothers movement, they started learning about the red pill communities and so forth. Then, and they started seeing the idle loneliness of men choosing themselves. Remember I said that thing earlier about how men are choosing peace? Okay. Well, that was my generation, Generation X, right? But what we're seeing is now the generation, they call them the millennials, this millennial generation, they're also seeking peace and they're doing it at a younger age. So you got people, you got young guys that are still in high school talking about they're not even going to look into dating. They're not even, some of them are virgins and they have no interest in popping, you know, anybody popping their cherry or however you want to call it, or busting their first nut. They are focused on video games, those other community, gamer communities. They're not gay. They're not out there trying to see other people. But the whole concept of a male loneliness epidemic is out. Yeah. Most of the men that I talk to that are in that loneliness epidemic are married black men. Yes, yes, yes. They're already with somebody. And they feel lonely because they feel like they're being abandoned in their own relationships by their women. Okay, so I want y'all to hear something now in regards to what the Great Reset means globally for everybody and how we need to be prepared because of what this means for us.
Stop and look around. The chair you're sitting on, the phone in your hand, the walls of your house, every single thing you own is about to be challenged. It's not a conspiracy theory, it's a global mandate. They promised us a better future, but the fine print reads, by 2030, you will own nothing and you will be happy. But the truth is, you won't be happy. You'll be locked out. They call it the Great Reset. It's a seismic shift that will fundamentally change how money works, what your assets are worth, and who controls the future of finance. This isn't just about inflation or a recession. This is about control. A collision of global debt, de-dollarization, and a centralized push toward a new system. Today, we are dissecting the three biggest threats this reset poses to your money and the three specific assets you must own to survive it. This is not for the faint of heart. The concept of a reset is framed as necessary. The WEF argues that the old system, shareholder capitalism, where the goal is only profit for owners, failed the world during the last crises. Their solution is stakeholder capitalism. In this new model, a company's goal is to serve everyone, the employees, the environment, and society. Sounds good, right? But this framework gives global bodies and governments immense power to dictate company policy through metrics like ESG scores. This leads us directly to the most controversial part, the fourth industrial revolution. This is the technological fusion where the physical, digital, and biological worlds blur. The ultimate goal is efficiency, a world where everything is a service you rent, not a product you own. Think of your car, your furniture, even your clothes as a subscription service. This model eliminates consumer waste and maximizes corporate control. If you don't comply with the ESG score, or if you speak out against the system, your access to those essential services can be cut off. This is the mechanism that turns you will own nothing from a scenario into a social reality. The economic reset is not just a Western idea. It's a direct challenge to the global supremacy of the US dollar, USD. For decades, the USD has been the world's reserve currency, meaning every major trade, especially oil, petrodollar system, happens in dollars. This gives the US immense power. But the new reset is being driven by a powerful counter-alliance, BRICS. Brazil, Russia, India, China, and now many more joining. These nations are actively creating alternative trade mechanisms and exploring a gold-backed currency to bypass the USD entirely. If the world stops needing the US dollar, it suffers a catastrophic drop in value. Imagine all those trillions of dollars suddenly flooding back into the US domestic market. The immediate result is an inflation storm that would make the 1970s look like a slow drizzle. Experts predict inflation could surge past 13%, wiping out half your savings overnight. This is not some distant war. This is a direct financial attack on your purchasing power, powered by a fundamental shift in who controls the world's resources and trade routes. The greatest asset you can own during this reset is not more dollars, but things that dollars can't destroy. The traditional stock market, which has benefited from cheap dollars for years, will not be immune. Analysts warn of a potential 20% to 40% market correction during this reset period. Your 401k or mutual fund won't be safe. This crash won't be caused by a single bad company. It will be a systemic failure of confidence in the old centralized system.
Now, let me go back to the ESG score real quick. So, according to a quick Google search, you will find a personal ESG score is a rating that assesses an individual's sustainability based on environment, social, and governance ESG factors. Okay, that's what ESG stands for, environment, government, and environment, social, and governance, factors. Companies use these scores to understand an individual's risk levels, that they consider them when offering employment, partnerships, or investments. Now, this has already happened to most Black people. This is why when you apply for jobs, they ask for your credit score. This is why when you are going for loans, or if somebody is willing to, if you have a business and, or an idea and you want some investment, this is what that means. But imagine that being attached to something else, like your behavior socially, your social media posts and things of that nature, because a lot of things will be added to this. The environment around you. Imagine if suddenly, like Jamaica and Haiti and the Caribbean, we get hit in certain areas with so-called natural disasters, you know, and prayers up for those in Jamaica and Haiti and all the countries that have been affected by the most recent hurricane. Okay, well, let us digress.
But here is where the smart money moves. Every reset creates two things: immense loss for the unprepared and generational wealth for the 1% who see the opportunity. To survive the Great Reset, you need assets that live outside the traditional system. First asset, physical gold and silver. This is the classic hedge against de-dollarization and inflation. It has no counterparty risk and has been a store of wealth for 5,000 years.
Remember all of those commercials over the last several years that have been telling you they'll give you cash for gold? What do you think that was about? All right. It's recognized because other people have been looking at the forecast, and it didn't take a lot to see this coming. You just had to have your eyes open, not caught up with modern distractions, and you had to just have a little bit of, we talk about building legacies, but you can't build a legacy unless you plan for it. And you have to plan for it based on things that have happened, so you know what to predict, the predictions are in terms of what things may happen in your futures. But nah, let us move on.
Second asset, decentralized utility crypto. Forget memecoins. Invest in assets tied to the fourth industrial revolution, like compute chain in our last video, that solve real-world problems, AI, energy, data. These have utility that central banks cannot control. Third asset, land/real hard assets. Property, essential utilities, and commodities. Things people must use, regardless of what the government or the WEF says. This is how you own something when everyone else is renting a service. If the Great Reset is the blueprint, then central bank digital currencies, CBDCs, are the digital control key. CBDC is not crypto. It is fiat currency controlled by the central bank, but in a digital format. Imagine your bank account, but now the government can program that money. They could set an expiration date on your spending, or they could restrict you from buying certain goods, like gas, if you don't meet an ESG compliance score. This is the final mechanism that enables the you will own nothing scenario. If you rent all your services, your car, your home appliances, and the money you use to pay for them is programmable, then your entire financial life is subject to the system's rules. If you step out of line, they don't seize your physical assets. They simply turn off your digital wallet. This is why owning those three assets, gold, utility crypto, and land, that exist outside the digital firewall becomes your only form of true sovereignty. During a reset, the biggest mistake is to seek illusionary safety. People will panic and put their money into bonds or cash, assets that are guaranteed to be destroyed by the inflation storm and the CBDC programming. The 1% are not preparing to stop the reset, they are preparing to profit from it. They are buying up the physical assets, the land, the gold mines, the utility companies, knowing that when the crash happens, they will exchange their centralized paper assets for real-world power. You must have...
And like I said, nothing that happens is new under the sun. For those of you who don't understand what he just explained, it's called austerity. Happens all the time. And it also happens in places where you see, like I said, natural disasters or so-called natural disasters, earthquakes, tsunamis, tornadoes ripping through, weather, you know, they call them acts of God. And they always pull up or countries that are defunct in terms of their national debt. And then they have to sell off their particular land, and they have to sell off parks, and they have to sell off waterways to all these private entities to repay the global institution, the global banks, the World Bank, the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, the central banks like the Banks of London, the Federal Reserve of America, which is a conglomeration of banks, but they serve as the bedrock of American fiat currency as we speak. So you just have to understand these things. I was teaching this stuff to my classes. This is one of the reasons why some students were complaining, because they said the shit I taught them scared them. Because I was telling them what was coming. And then when 2020 hit, they were like, thank you, Professor Jones, for preparing us for this time to come.
Adopt the reset mindset. Buy what the elite hoard and sell what the masses panic for. Remember the blueprint. The world is shifting from ownership to access. The greatest transfer of wealth is happening right now, separating those who control the assets from those who only rent them. Your strategy for 2030 is simple. 1. Eliminate your high interest debt. It's a digital chain. 2. Accumulate physical, tangible assets. 3. Learn the language of decentralized utility, the future of tech. Don't wait for governments to give you the all clear. By then, the new game will have already started and you will be on the wrong side of the fence. This is not fear. This is financial reality. If you want a guide that breaks down these tectonic shifts, finding the next gold mine, the next compute chain, and the strategies to keep your money outside the system's control, you need to be part of the Money Nexus. Hit the subscribe button now, turn on the notifications, and make sure you don't miss our next deep dive into the coming economic revolution. See you on the other side.
Now, you know, you gave y'all part of it, right?
Now, the United States is the wealthy...
Oh, we ain't going to do that, because they're about to move on to another joint, but we don't have time to check that out. Thought I stopped all that progressive moving forward. So I want y'all to hear another prognostic response to what's happening and what's happening to us in terms of the whole concept of a global reset.
This is a once in a lifetime great reset. They will not prepare you for this. A diversified portfolio where everything goes down might be down 70% instead of 90, but it will be down, and it'll be down a lot. and you'll lose most of your life savings. And after this bubble, we don't have the ever-rising demographic trends, okay? The technology cycle, which peaked recently, is still going to be down for a while. There's not going to be anything to come roaring out of this. In fact, I was talking in another interview recently, and people more into gold. I said, well, gold, it will go down, but it will not go down as much as stocks. And gold will be a benefactor of the rise of the next great country in the world, which is absolutely 100% inevitable. India is going to be the next China for the next 4 days. India most drove this boom.
All right, and shout out to you. Listen, this is what's happening. This is happening. And one of the things that we are not prepared for, we're not prepared for tomorrow. And I'm telling you, as black people, man, we're not prepared for yesterday, right? Yesterday, we're still recovering from yesterday. So how are we prepared for the day of tomorrow? We don't plan for the future. We plan for the weekend. We plan trips. The only thing we plan is the family trips. We plan birthdays. We plan holidays. We don't plan for the future. And that's the biggest problem. All right? And that's what happened when you remove the masculine features from the family. We don't want to talk about it, but we don't want to acknowledge what's wrong. So many of you are scared to sit on your steps right now because of what is wrong. Many of you are clutching your purses, or you're clutching, or you're trying to make sure you have it on you when you're outside. And I ain't just talking about the women. You know, there's brothers out here who are worried about what's happening, but I'm just talking about the majority of the black community. Y'all already know how we run. You already know. And we're not prepared for what's happening. We don't have any answers. We're out there protesting police brutality. Do you want to police your neighborhoods? I'll wait. Who's going to be out there addressing crime in the community? Forget just walking around and posting up. Who's going to address the crime? Because this society has bred savages. And if somebody is willing to kidnap children, if somebody's willing to torture somebody, if somebody is willing to run up in your house, there's no way to sugarcoat what that motherfucker is. No way around it. And we have all the time in the world to sit back and find new ways to be distracted. I still remember when everybody was on lockdown, how people were glad when specific DJs were just doing Instagram lives and all this other stuff, and they were just going on for hours spinning music. It's cool. But let's not get caught up in the fact that, man, the government shut the whole, not just the government, the entire planet was shut down for 3 months. What do you think happened in those 3 months? A lot of things, man, because I didn't stay in the house. I was outside. Right? And I saw the construction of all those 5G towers that were being put up. How they were rebuilding and reinforcing the whole, what did he call it? The surveillance society, right? How they were monitoring us, the surveillance grid. I was watching it. Even warned people back then. Nobody listened because it wasn't what they wanted to hear at that particular time. They didn't want to be responsible for making any changes that would protect them and their children, their future, for what was to come. They were just waiting for Uncle Sam to save us, Uncle Sam to rescue us. Did that happen? And in the meanwhile, you had the separation that took place, that's taking place in the black community. The irreconcilable difference that are no longer even in a place where we can negotiate a truce. There's blame everywhere. know, one of the reasons why I don't participate in panels, particularly cross table panels, is because this disingenuous conversation. There's nobody that wants to come there with the notion of, hey, let's fix and repair. Identify what's wrong, but fix and repair what's wrong with black people. Nobody is ready to do the deep dive to understand the how black people in this country, our journey here was never the same as anybody else's. We didn't come over here voluntarily, especially during the antebellum pre-Civil War years. And we have never had an opportunity to even fix or try to create communities where we can actually move forward as a people. And you can tell them, well, yeah, we had Black Wall Street. Yeah. Keyword had. There were a lot of those towns. And now, if it's not for a placard or a history book, you don't know anything about them. That means those towns, even as they were building, were under duress. There's never been a time in this country where black people were allowed to solve their own problems. Uninterrupted, uninterfered with. Everybody feels as though they having a fucking opinion on what's wrong with black people. And the problem with black people is we go out there and seek and sort their opinions because deep down inside, we think they're smarter than us. Well, they got it together. They must know something. Yeah, they had it together when they got here. They hopped off the Mayflower. They hopped off all them different damn ships. And they had an idea and concept of how they wanted to run this country. And when those other people came, they were invited. Remember, bring us your hungry, your tired, your huddled masses yearning to be free. Make sure you sign that book at Ellis Island. That's how New York became a city of immigrants, the largest city in America. That's how Los Angeles on the West Coast became the New York of the West Coast. They're the biggest city. And you look at the breakdowns of those cities. Probably the two most diverse cities in the country right now. In terms of populations, in terms of immigrants and foreigners. This is what it's come to. And now we're moving into the Hunger Games. Remember I said that thing about predictive programming? What did you think the movie was? When they were having those different provinces and how they were mining colonies and how they had peacekeeping troops to make sure that these people were killing squirrels. They were out there shooting squirrels with bows and arrows to eat, to actually taste meat. Yeah. Pay attention. While they went into the mega cities, the large super cities. I know I'm watching. We're watching Philadelphia become one of those. Like you said, they removed everything's becoming green. They're removing the highways. They're removing your access to work. And then they're taking away your jobs. The unnecessary jobs, of course. No, we need let me tell y'all something. The Department of Education is less than, 50 years old? Let me just double check that real quick. Let me check that real quick before we get off here. You know how much things I do in real time is ridiculous. Let me see, Department of Education timeline. Okay, let's see. Education 1979. That's when. Oh, that deserves something stronger. 1979. So an institution that's been in place less than 50 years. And we're talking about the protections and all that other shit. Man, listen. Have you seen the offset of that? Have you seen what happens, especially in urban settings, with these schools?
Have you been in them? Have y'all been in them? There needs to be a reset on how education is done in this country. But we're talking about economics and the loss of jobs that are never coming back. And you know, the irony is this whole conversation about black women being cut out of the government sector, right? You know, nobody's making a big deal of the fact that more black men over the last 10 years have lost jobs. Nobody. Nobody give a damn that there's more homeless black men than any other demographic. That black men commit suicide at 4 times the rate of their women. Not the ideation, but the 4 times the rate. Nobody talks about that. Nobody seems to give a damn. And now winter is here. The only question is how cold will winter get and how many of us will it claim? When Kevin Samuels talked about this, the Godfather, he even told black men, listen, we ain't out the woods. He said, don't sit there and celebrate the demise of black women. Black men need to get their shit together too. And that's been the focus of this channel. Empowering brothers, letting brothers know they have worth, they have value. And also getting to see brothers, myself, C. Suave, how we're actually putting our heads together to do things. We can make things happen. Y'all just gotta see the light. So that's pretty much it. I mean, I can get into a whole lot of other things, but the assets you're gonna need, focus. I'm not so sure about crypto. I've never been sure about crypto. I know people who come up on crypto, but crypto is very unstable. And sometimes if you invest in the wrong crypto, you'll lose your life savings. As it stands, your life savings and investments and bonds, as he stated, diversifying them is not going to change anything. Everything is going to get hit by this reset. Everything.
The hunt is on. And you're the prey.
Go back and watch the first Hunger Games. Go back and watch it. Get a clear understanding of what you're looking forward to. Because they had societies like the ones we live in now, and that's what their societies descended to. That was a futuristic movie. That wasn't a movie about now. That was a movie about time to come. All right? The digital currency. Social currency. The fact that you get caught jaywalking, you might lose 5 credits. The international, global, one world government system with one world currency. We're just not reading the tea leaves. The biometric systems. All that's coming up now. Oh, look at what AI is doing. But y'all was so, you know, y'all was so technologically advanced. You got them iPhones and they use retinal scans and fingerprints to open them so you can lock them. Voice activated passwords for something as simple as paying, you know, a cable bill or a telephone bill. Internet service. And now you're complaining about how it's being used against you. To destroy your image, to send out false messages. And then if you pay attention to the 2027 predictions, shit, look at how the world is now and ask yourself, are we not currently living in that model? Like I said, man, yeah, I could talk about this for days, but I have to cut this short. So, once again, thank y'all all for taking time out to tune in. Don't forget about our crisis holiday food drive and ways to contribute. Like I said, my email, I'll give you my work email is cajones@ccp.edu. That's cajones@ccp.edu. And then we'll work out ways to make sure that these people get fed and these families get fed. But until then, family, stay healthy, stay warm, stay connected to your loved ones. And as always, war and peace. Because if you want peace, you better be willing to wage war for it. And I am out of here.